and welcome to Parkinson's Life, the award-winning podcast offering a voice to the global Parkinson's community. Each episode, we bring together people impacted by the condition for an honest conversation to share their stories, perspectives, and ideas on how to live well with Parkinson's. In this episode, we're focusing on Parkinson's and food. Food is such a huge part of our lives, but how does the way you eat affect Parkinson's symptoms? And does Parkinson's impact the way you eat? Our first guest is Rochelle Flanagan, a dietitian based in Dublin, Ireland. Rochelle, who was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2017, says nutrition is a missing piece of the Parkinson's puzzle and believes that most people with the condition don't know enough about it. She talks to Zarella Martinez, a chef, podcaster, and author who was diagnosed in 2005. Zarella was born and raised in Mexico, but has lived in New York, where she opened her restaurant, since 1983. More recently, she has been working on a website called A Taste for Life with Zarella, as well as her own podcast, Cooking in Mexican from A to Z, which she hosts with her son. In this episode, Rochelle and Zarella discuss their top tips for cooking while dealing with Parkinson's symptoms, whether nutrition is a neglected part of treatment, and the joys of singing and dancing in the kitchen.
I am Rochelle Flanagan. I'm based in Dublin, Ireland. I'm 52, and my journey to being here today basically started on the ski slopes in France. And I was 3 months pregnant with my daughter, and obviously I couldn't ski, but I was waiting for my husband and my son to come down and my friends, and I was having hot chocolate. And I noticed my hand shaking. I thought, oh, that's really odd. And it wouldn't stop shaking. And I kind of thought, oh, that's a bit strange. And it went on for about a month. But when I remember saying to my husband when he came down off the slope, I said to him, you know, it's really strange. My hand is shaking. I can't get it to stop. And I said to him, as long as it's not Parkinson's. Little did I know. So then the other thing that was kind of strange for me is I work as a dietitian. And I was in my clinic, and a patient had come back to see me after, you know, a gap of about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And I took out my record card for that patient and went to write in it and noticed that my handwriting was a lot smaller than it had been before. And I thought, oh, that's really weird. And what made it really strange was when I tried to make my handwriting bigger, I couldn't. And I thought, okay, that's definitely odd. And basically went to my GP, asked for a referral to a neurologist. I had to wait until my daughter was born and when she was breastfed. So that was in about 7 months, 8 months before I could have a DAT scan, because obviously you can't do that when you're breastfeeding. So yeah, so basically with the delivery of my gorgeous little girl, I got a delivery of a Parkinson's diagnosis. So it was a bit bittersweet. But anyway, here I am 5 years later, and my daughter's almost five, and you know, all is good. So that's me. How about you, Zarella?
Well, I'm Zarella Martinez. I live in New York and work here, but I'm about to move to Mexico, back to my home country. And I have had Parkinson's since 1987, even though I was diagnosed in 2004. I was getting a massage. It was a time when I was opening my restaurant. It was a very stressful time. And I was having like out-of-body experiences, which were kind of cool. But I was getting a massage one day, and I got an anxiety attack so bad that they had to call an ambulance. And we noticed that from that day forward, my left hand started clawing. So, you know, I started getting, you know, checkups and everything, but I was doing all the right things without knowing that I was doing all the right things. You know, it was the most creative period of my time. So, because I believe firmly that there's creativity, exercise, and socialization are the key to keeping well with Parkinson's. So I was socializing a lot, you know, opening up my restaurant that lived for 25 years or 24 years. And I was exercising a lot, doing yoga and working out. So I was able to keep it at bay, you know, for many, many years. And then finally, I got hit by a cab in 2004. And when I went to the doctor and they gave me an MRI and they said the results are not very clear because of the patient's tremor. And I said, what tremor? Well, it turns out that they sent me and they discovered that I had Parkinson's. So I've been diagnosed since then, but it hasn't stopped me in any way. You know, I've had an incredibly fulfilling career. You know, I've done everything you can probably, I've written 3 books. I did a PBS series. I had a line of products at Walmart. I put all my papers together and Harvard bought them, you know, all my research material. You know, so I'm very goal oriented and I keep on going from one project to another. The latest is this podcast that I have with my son, Aaron Sanchez.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. So hang on, I just want to back up. In terms of, you're saying you think you had it from 1987 until you got hit by a cab. And basically that was obviously when they noticed your tremor. But like, it sounded like you said your hand was like a claw. So it was like dystonia, you know, and I know a friend of mine who has dystonia and it's quite debilitating. You know, she always talks about when she's driving in the car and sometimes her middle finger gets stuck in an upright position and everyone thinks that she's giving them the finger. But in terms of like, how did you manage that as a chef? Like if your hand was in a claw, was it your dominant hand or your non-dominant hand?
It wasn't my non-dominant hand. And I was a kind of, you know, when I was discovered by Paul Prudhomme. He was a very famous Louisiana chef. A month after meeting him, he invited me to participate at this event at Tavern on the Green. And I said to him, I can't go. I can't even chop an onion like a chef. He said, you don't have to. You're the chef. Just say, bring me a chopped onion. So that's the way that I have dealt my career. You know, I get people to do all my prep for me, and then I come in and put it together and create the flavors. Tell me what you used to eat when you were little, when you were growing up.
The Irish sort of culture in terms of food, as you may know, revolved a lot around the potato. So, you know, typical things would be Irish stew that we'd have or coddle, that kind of food. And I suppose it really did come from a heritage of, you know, we didn't have much as a country in terms of access to a lot of food besides sort of, you know, the fish and meat and potatoes and, you know, farm kind of foods, you know. But then I kind of laugh because my mum sort of, I suppose when I grew up, it was a generation where really, you know, processed food came in. So, you know, there'd be sort of these packaged lasagna, pre-made lasagnas. And it was sort of a real, in terms of a lot of women helping them sort of reduce the load in the home, was that sometimes they got these sort of ready-made meals. It was a whole new phenomenon. So I do have memories of those been microwaved for me. So it was a kind of mixture of, you know, home-cooked food and then some of this new, you know, ready-made meals that were sort of, I'd say, seemed almost luxurious at the time. And of course, we know it's quite different these days. So my mum, you know, probably wasn't the, you know, most adventurous cook. The most adventurous thing she probably did was a curry. I always remember having curry and she'd put boiled eggs in them. I have no idea. Do boiled eggs go with curry? I didn't think so. But So, I'd say it probably wasn't as adventurous as growing up with the Mexican food culture. So maybe share with me what your childhood was like in terms of food.
Well, it was wonderful because I grew up on a cattle ranch in Chihuahua, Mexico, where my mother had a pantry with food from China, from Italy, from France, you know, including escargot shell. She had, you know, we used to can all our sauces and vegetables and fruits. And at noon, we had Mexican-style food and a light lunch. And at night, my mother would cook continental, everything from rabbit provençal to lamb curry to paella to whatever, you know, to chop suey. So we grew up with an incredible way of eating. And my kids grew up in that same way, and they have these amazing palates, and so do my grandchildren now.
That's amazing.
So how has Parkinson's affected your approach to food?
Well, I don't, it hasn't actually changed that much because I retrained as a dietitian when I was 32. So Parkinson's didn't change my approach to food, but it had changed earlier because my sister had actually been diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 39. And in response to that, you know, I realized there was a lot of information out there that wasn't very accurate with regard to the advice around cancer and diet at the time. So I actually decided to leave my job that I was in and go and retrain as a dietitian. That was really what changed my relationship with food in terms of kind of healthier eating. In terms of learning about diet and nutrition, I went to the University of Ulster in Coleraine, which is a huge research center for nutrition and diet. And I really saw the impact that it had on prevention of chronic diseases and helping people, you know, when they had diseases. So, you know, it's kind of ironic that, you know, I have a very healthy diet and I still got Parkinson's, you know. So people often ask, you know, what do I need to do to prevent Parkinson's from happening, and, you know, what diet to eat. I have great belief now in the power of, you know, foods to help. I don't think you can say it can cure disease, but, you know, potentially in terms of progression, it might slow progression. I so sometimes I question in terms of maybe, you know, because I have a sort of an idiopathic form of Parkinson's, you know, maybe my diet from when I was younger, because a lot of research now is showing that, you know, your diet in utero, so in other words, your mum's diet, and then as a child, your diet can actually have an impact in terms of developing chronic diseases later. So who knows? But so as a result, no, Parkinson's hasn't changed. I've always had, in the last, you know, 20 years, a healthy approach to diet. And what about yourself? It seems that, you know, you probably had a healthy diet by what you talk about your mum's cooking and that. But did you change anything, do you think?
Well, not really. Actually, I just became even more health conscious. You know, I used to eat at the restaurant, but I used to cook at home 3 or 4 times a week. And I was always really conscious of a balanced diet. So it hasn't really changed that much, you know. But I eat very healthily and mostly vegetarian diet. But I eat meat. I eat meat, but... On regular days, I mostly just eat vegetables.
And you mentioned earlier on that you had, you know, difficulty chopping an onion. So what do you do? Do you have difficulty yourself preparing for yourself in terms of eating?
No, you know what I do when the housekeeper comes? I always used to have them chop up onions for me and peel garlic, which is what I hate to do. So I always have chopped up onions and garlic in the refrigerator. So if I feel like making something in 5 minutes, I can make it, because that's such a pain to do. So that's one of the things that I tell people with Parkinson's, that you have to have some stuff that's pre-done and plan your meals so that you can use the stuff that you have, you know. So
that totally makes sense. And for me, I don't have a problem at the, you know, certainly at the moment preparing. I'm a bit slower because I don't have a tremor. It's funny, that month that when I was pregnant, I had the tremor, but it went away. So I have more sort of the rigid sort of type in terms of being a bit slow with my arm movement. And yeah, and so it's sometimes a bit frustrating in terms of chopping. It's, you know, you feel like you're not getting quite the same speed or strength. But I make myself, and actually an OT that I've done work with, you know, she'd be very much of keep doing it, you know, use it or lose it. So, you know, if you stop doing the chopping, you stop doing whatever, you know, your brain sort of basically adjusts that. So I suppose from a neuroplasticity point of view, she was saying, keep trying. And it's actually a way that I can tell if I am, you know, if maybe I'm going to, you know, have a little bit of an off period before the next tablet comes up. I know maybe if I'm slower chopping, it gives me an indication, or if there's a problem. So Zarelle, I noticed on your fabulous website that, you know, you have a quote that says, if you can't fix it, sing, which I love. You know, tell us a bit more about that in terms of, you know, your experience with food and Parkinson's.
Well, I sing all the time, whether I'm happy, if I'm sad, if I'm excited, if, you know, it's my go-to thing. And I've always sung it. That was one of the things we did at the ranch, you know, because there was no TV and all that kind of stuff. And my mom played the piano and we all sang. All my cousins would spend the summer there and we would sing every single day. So when I started with the Parkinson's, having trouble enunciating, I decided that I hated the voice therapy, So I decided I would start taking singing lessons, like formal singing lessons. So I started doing that, but Mexican, you know, Mexican music. So then I decided that somebody heard me sing and they asked me to be in a movie as playing my thing, a bartender, you know, bartender, singer, cabaret singer. And then I decided I would do an album, you know, so that I did this album and it's really good. It doesn't sell a lot yet, but it's good. And so I just sing all the time. I mean, that's the thing that makes me happiest. And then at the same time, it helps me enunciate.
It's true. I mean, I've done the speech therapy and obviously it's very good for people with Parkinson's, but certainly the singing is probably more fun. And I've actually been thinking myself, I should really join a choir, but it sounds fun what you've done. And I think it's amazing that you've done an album. What age were you when you did the album?
I just did it 2 years ago and it's and it's called Sad Songs from a Happy Heart.
Oh.
And it's on Spotify and everything.
Oh, fantastic.
It was like the songs I used to sing with my mom.
It's such an inspiration hearing that. I must say, for me, probably dancing is the thing that I like. And obviously it's very good for Parkinson's, just like the singing is. But I think it comes back to, you know, that you just get such a good feeling from it. So, you know, I do like, you know, the odd time having a little glass of wine and a bit of a dance while I'm cooking, particularly when people are coming to visit. You know, that's the most fun time for me in terms of cooking, I think.
I do a lot of entertaining. And it often involves music, but I make this huge buffets or seated dinners or whatever, because that is the thing that I enjoy the most. That's what I do for fun.
Yeah, I mean, I must say I love doing, and obviously with COVID, it's been really hard because we haven't been able to have that experience. And I literally just had friends over for a barbecue to thank them because they took part in a fundraiser I did to raise money for young onset Parkinson's, where I basically swam in the sea for every day in the month of May. But it was so, the energy of us all being together and, you know, then, you know, cooking the different foods and everyone brought different food. And, you know, definitely there's a whole sort of good factor feeling of eating together and being together. And as you say, you know, the different foods people brought and everyone, you know, just, yeah, I think, again, it helps the dopamine, you know, that sense of being together and sharing food, breaking food together, you know, goes back for years. And in terms of, you know, your cooking and your eating and that, has your sense of taste or smell been affected at all?
A little bit, but not really. You know, one of the things that I try to tell people with Parkinson's is to try to develop a taste memory in case their taste goes away, and to try to have somebody make your favorite dish and learn and get the recipe, you know, and for you to be able to conjure up those flavors, you know, like putting a raspberry in your tongue and just letting it, you know, so that you really capture this flavor, because a lot of people do lose that. So it's important to remember what things taste like.
Mm, yeah. I suppose as a dietitian, one of the areas that we would work with would be oncology patients. And I even know with my own sister, you know, a lot of people when they're on treatment, they lose the sense of taste and smell as well. So it's really important, you know, to use herbs and spices to kind of help the taste buds and help the smell. So would you use a lot of spices or herbs or, you know, those kind of things in your cooking?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've developed this concept that is built on building blocks, because, you know, it's very hard for people with Parkinson's to come up with dishes and stuff. So this, the building block is, let's say, a salsa, you know, pico de gallo, like tomato, onion, garlic, and chili and cilantro and that. I use that as a base to make other dishes. For instance, I saute that and add eggs and tortilla chips, and I have huevos a la mexicana, you know, Mexican-style eggs. Or I saute it and add zucchini and corn and cheese and cook the zucchini in it, and it's delicious. Or I add spices, you know, like cinnamon and cloves and cumin, which is a combination of the Mexican, and I cook fish in it, and then you have my famous red snapper hash.
Oh, sounds delicious.
So what I do is that I use this building blocks to expand somebody's cooking world.
Yeah, I think I saw it. It was A Taste for Life. Yeah, it looks really lovely. The recipes look fabulous. In fact, my saliva is already going with all the, because I love, you know, salsa. I love guacamole and I absolutely adore coriander. Like, I just love it. So what's your favorite dish?
I mean, the thing is that it depends. My favorite dish is what I feel like eating, you know, that day. It's like this weekend, I'm doing not Mexican, but the New York Times called me one time to ask me what I would cook for a man if I wanted to seduce him. So I put together this like, it's a tagine of Turkish pilaf, you know, eggplant with pomegranate, molasses, vinaigrette, you know, zucchini thing. So, and my all the flavors go together. So this is what I'm going to make this weekend.
Oh my gosh, can I come? Sounds. And actually tagine is one of my favorite dishes. The flavors in it is just, you know, fantastic. I suppose for me, my favorite dish is anything anyone cooks for me instead of me having to cook for myself. To be honest, you know, as a mum, I just feel like I'm on the go trying to, you know, and I have a fussy eater in my household as well. And just, yeah, I, you know, just being cooked for is my favorite dish at the moment.
You're listening to the Parkinson's Life podcast with Rochelle and Zarella. Be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform to hear more from the series.
You know, you mentioned there about building blocks. So what would you say to someone who can't cook or says that they can't cook?
Well, the building blocks, I think it's something that most of them are so easy to do. It's a base, and then they all they have to do is saute or add another ingredient, you know. So if they say they can't cook, well, I said how sad, you know. But you know, it's very important for them to become nutritional, you know. And it's also something to do, you know. Something, it's very important to have something to do. So I always tell people when I'm speaking to people with Parkinson's or anybody, practice that you have to find something that you're passionate about, you know, something that you cannot live if you can't do this. You know, and it's hard for people with Parkinson's to do that, especially when it comes to food, because it's not just the food, it's not cooking, but cleaning, which is what I hate with a passion. You know, so it's easy for people to get lazy about cooking and getting processed foods, which is terrible, because that has absolutely zero nutrition. See, I have a theory that you get full of flavor, not of the amount of food.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And I suppose that I think, you know, knowing with a lot of my friends with young onset Parkinson's, you know, who maybe have jobs and kids, it, and then they have Parkinson's on top of it, the fatigue is a big factor. And, you know, many of them end up resorting to maybe, you know, processed food or takeaway food, or because they're just too exhausted to actually cook for themselves. And that's hard. And then on the other end of the scale, you might have people who are older who, you know, are really struggling with symptoms and the fatigue again. And then apathy is another thing, which is a symptom of Parkinson's that people often aren't aware of. Sometimes, you know, people when they're living on their own, whether they're young or older, just they kind of think, well, there's no point just cooking because it's just me. But actually, I always say to them, like, you are the most important person, you know, and even for the mums, that actually you need to look after yourself so you can look after your kids. But I think with Parkinson's, it just can be difficult for people to do that. But I suppose going back to your building blocks, I suppose it's by preparation, you know, and I'd always have said that as a dietitian to clients, you know, to try and pre-prepare meals ahead of time, or, you know, to have, as you say, batches of you know, the food ready to cook. But again, that can be difficult when people are tired. So what do you do when you're tired and you just don't feel like cooking?
I make a quesadilla. But I make quesadilla with native corn, tortillas, cheese, and maybe some hot sauce or something. And that's very satisfying and not too terrible. Another thing is, I think that it's very important to have a great pantry or somebody to set it up for you, so that you, what if you feel like having something, you have the ingredients there.
Mm. So Zarella, do you think that it can be difficult for people to eat healthily from a cost point of view?
Now, when I was in doing part of my research for one of my books, I asked, it was during the crisis, the peso crisis in Mexico. And I said, how are you dealing with this crisis? And he said, the crisis doesn't affect us at all because we eat the same thing all the time. Corn, beans, potatoes, and chili and tomatoes, and there's always plenty of that. So I think that everybody has like a basic set of ingredients that they have in their home. I guess the go-to food would be eggs, you know, which are inexpensive and you can do so many things with them, even though I don't really eat them that often. But I think that's one thing that people who are very low budget can do.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of, with COVID and here as well with Brexit happening, that, you know, everything has gone up in price, including foods. So, you know, trying to eat healthily can be, you know, and people talk about eating organic. Like, not everybody can eat because, unfortunately, organic food tends to be dearer. So I often say to people that they can use frozen fruit and vegetables, and that's, you know, a cheaper way. And in fact, sometimes has more nutrition in it than some of the vegetables that are sitting around in your house for too long, because it's flash freezes in the nutrients. Obviously, though, it doesn't taste as nice, but if you're doing like a stew or something, it doesn't really matter so much. You know, the Mediterranean diet is the one diet that seems to show the reduced risk of developing Parkinson's. Obviously, olive oil, you can buy in larger quantities, but they need to go for the extra virgin olive oil, which tends to be more expensive. But again, you can buy it in sort of larger quantities, so it's cheaper, and use small amounts of it.
As a dietitian, do you think that people with Parkinson's know enough about nutrition?
No, is the simple answer. I don't. In fact, we did a survey. I'm a member of the Dublin branch of the Parkinson's Association of Ireland. I'm on the committee, and I did a nutrition survey for our members, and it came back that only, you know, 1 out of 10 patients with Parkinson's asked to be referred to a dietitian. I think that was fairly obvious that they didn't understand that diet was important. And also, what was even more shocking was that the 9 out of 10 neurologists and GPs didn't refer the patient to a dietitian. So that's even more worrying, that, you know, the experts don't see the importance of diet in terms of people's, you know, managing their Parkinson's. And in a short answer, I think no. I mean, I think the people who are health conscious to start with, you know, do a lot of searching on the internet, they're the people who sort of probably know. But even then, sometimes the evidence and the advice they're getting off the internet is not actually the best route to go. You know, they want sort of, you know, some kind of magic pill or magic diet, but actually they're not even doing the basics right in terms of eating healthily, you know? Yeah, I think there's a lot more that can be done. I think it's one of the missing pieces of the puzzle in terms of helping people live with Parkinson's better. So what do you think yourself? Do you think, you know, from engaging with people with Parkinson's, do you sense that they understand, you know, about good food?
Life is so busy now for so many people, and there's so many responsibilities, and there's so many single mothers, and you know, so many people doing two jobs, and it's just really hard for people to really concentrate on that, you know, as far as like eating healthily. I mean, Mexican cuisine in general is very healthy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's difficult in terms of certainly people who, you know, as you say, are working two jobs or tight on money, you know, to try and sort of bring in the healthy diet. But I think that's why it's even more important that the healthcare providers should be raising it, because I know in the States, for example, there is funding vouchers for food, you know, for other conditions. So I don't know if that's the same, that people are being provided that for Parkinson's. But, you know, a bit like people talk about doing exercise prescription, I think there should be nutrition prescription for chronic disease, you know, not just Parkinson's, that actually people are given vouchers, or somehow that there's some incentive as well to change one's habits. Because, you know, I as a dietitian can give people all the advice in the world, but ultimately they have to make the decision. But I think, you know, if in general there was more focus on the power of nutrition for Parkinson's, you know, so even like the basic thing of people not understanding around timing their meds around their meals in terms of protein interaction with their tablets, and how that can actually reduce how well they're functioning, because basically their tablet doesn't get to where it needs to be absorbed properly because it's stuck in their gut because they've, you know, eaten way too large a meal, or, you know, they've taken it with a very high protein meal. But that, even that information is not getting out to patients, you know. So I find it quite frustrating that possibly people are advancing in their Parkinson's meds and going to, you know, more advanced therapies where actually, you know, they haven't really looked at the lifestyle therapies in terms of nutrition and its impact, exercise and its impact, you know, and even back to your point about, you know, pre-preparing food and cutting food. Like, lots of people don't get access to an OT in terms of being able to use weighted forks and knives to be able to eat more easily, or, you know, having mats that you can stick your plate to so that it doesn't move if you're really dyskinetic. You know, there's a lot of people who don't know any of that information, and they're just upped in their meds because nobody has spoken to them, because we don't get referred to these health professionals. So anyway, that's my soapbox box over, but I find it quite frustrating.
But you know, my whole Parkinson's is that nobody has ever talked to me about nutrition. And I've gone through every single Parkinson's doctor in New York.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That says it all. There was one woman I met one time, and it was outside of my clinic. And, you know, I kind of said to her, you know, you look like you've lost a lot of weight. Would that be the case? And she said, yeah, I have. And I said, do you know why, you know, you've lost weight? You know, you're finding it hard to eat. She said, I find it sometimes hard to swallow. And then I said to her, like, have you any problem cutting your food? And she said, yeah, I can't. She said, I can't cut my meat. So she said, I kind of play with the food, but and I was like, did you tell your neurologist this? And she's like, no, I didn't. And I said, well, I think you need to. But what shocked me was that it was very obvious she'd lost a lot of weight, but obviously no one weighed her, no one asked her, and she was losing weight, and she's probably in her mid-50s and much more advanced in her disease stage and in her symptoms than she possibly should be, because malnutrition and weight loss can have a real impact on your symptoms. But that could be turned around if she got the right input and her weight, you know, she gained more muscle, and she got tools to help her cut her food and her swallows assessed. So I think that's, you know, for me is a very impactful image of how, you know, it's basically a patient has been neglected there, really.
It happened actually to me recently. I don't know, I was going through kind of I don't even know what the bad thing was, but all of a sudden I just dropped 10 pounds, which was very welcome. But, you know, it was not good for my body because my skin, you know, got off. But the thing is that I went through a period where I just didn't feel like eating. And it was like Parkinson's. I mean, it was definitely a Parkinson's thing. And so I started eating like things like peanut butter and things that would give me, you know, calories and at the same time some sort of nutrition. But it was like a weird thing, because I've always been into food. So just,
and did you work out what it was that suddenly put you off your appetite?
It was probably psychological, you know. I was just going through a big thing.
Yeah. And but you put the weight back on?
No, but and I don't want to.
But you didn't, you gained some of it back. You didn't lose
anymore. What I'm doing is like a lot of really strenuous yoga now, twice a week, and then I work out another day, and I'm getting my muscles back. You know,
yeah.
The whole COVID thing was horrible because I couldn't exercise the way that I'm used to. So, Rochelle, as a dietitian, do you have any advice for people with Parkinson's on what they should be eating?
Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, it is about, you know, eating as healthily as you can. And, you know, albeit the people sort of diss the various food pyramids or food plates that are out there around the world, you know, these kind of information leaflets that their local public health governments produce, they're based on evidence, which is to make sure that you eat a really good, rich plant-based diet. So loads of fruit, loads of vegetables, and also using whole grains. So, you know, whole grain rice, whole grain pasta, bulgur wheat, buckwheat, quinoa, all those kind of, you know, nutritious grains, to make sure you get some oily fish into your diet. So salmon, mackerel, a couple of times a week. And then to choose sort of lean protein foods. So, you know, chicken, turkey, you know, to keep your red meat. do a couple of times a week, you know, maximum 3 or 4 ounces a couple of times a week. And that just helps your iron levels. But otherwise using chicken, fish, eggs, as you mentioned, which are, you know, a cheap source of protein as well. And then using, you know, vegetable-based protein sources also, which is, you know, things like your chickpeas, your kidney beans and all those kind of things. And then obviously, if they can afford it, to have olive oil in their diet, really important in terms of the Mediterranean diet, is using olive oil or rapeseed oil, which is big in Ireland. It's very similar to olive oil. In your salads, really important in terms of a good monounsaturated healthy fat, and eating olives and avocados, really healthy for you. And just, you know, to keep the treat foods to what they're called, treat foods. So I think where people go wrong is they eat treat foods like, you know, an everyday food. And it always strikes me when I go to France or, you know, you rarely see, you know, French people eating loads of treat foods, you know, where in Ireland on every street corner, there's a treat shop, you know, that you can get loads of treats in. And also just, you know, to enjoy your food, like, so enjoyment, cooking with friends, as you've said, Zarella, and, you know, the odd glass of wine. In fact, the Mediterranean diet, you know, has a bit of wine, but that's not, you know, too much wine. Sorry, as my daughter is coming in now to join the conversation. So how about you, Zarella? What would you advise people in terms of eating?
Well, basically the same thing you said. I mean, you know, I eat a lot of corn, tortillas, that kind of stuff. It's very healthy. Beans, you know, which are also... But I do eat a lot of cheese. I don't know that that's healthy or not, but it's very good. I do think that the most important thing is to eat things that you really enjoy eating, you know, because a lot of people get very lazy about cooking and because they can't think of something, you know, that is going to taste good for them. And I think that you have to do that. But I mean, everything you listed is exactly what I think people should eat.
So it's been an absolute pleasure and like really motivating to think that you have lived at Parkinson's so well. And what I love is that Parkinson's is not front and center in your life. Your life is front and center. And Parkinson's is just the uninvited guest, as I call it, that you have to look after. So it's been a real pleasure, you know, doing the podcast with you today. And I'm really honored to have had the chance to talk to you. And I'm dying to try some of your recipes.
Well, thank you so much. And I feel the same way. You know what I love about your bio is that you're involved with a lot of women's groups. And I've dealt with this thing by myself, you know, trying to pretend it doesn't live in me. But I mean, I don't help people the way that you do by putting them together and all of that. And I think that is a wonderful way to share your knowledge and yourself and your condition and how well you are handling as well.
Thanks a million, Zarella. And do you know what? I'd love to invite you because myself and two friends set up a thing called the Women's Parkinson's Project because we really do want to raise the voices of women in terms of our needs living with Parkinson's. So, you know, I'd love to invite you maybe at some stage to come and chat to us because I think you'd be a real inspiration to all the women, not just young onset, but just women in general who, you know, need more sort of beacons of hope in terms of living with this disease like yourself. So it'd be great if we could get you along sometime to chat to us.
I would love that. Thank you.
Parkinson's Life magazine is produced by Speak Media on behalf of the European Parkinson's Disease Association, the leading voice for Parkinson's in Europe. This podcast has been supported by a grant from the Boston Scientific Foundation Europe, whose mission is to improve patient well-being using digital or innovative solutions. For the latest research and information on Parkinson's, visit epda.eu.com. Thanks for listening to the Parkinson's Life podcast. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review. It helps make sure others can find us. If you'd like to share your story with Parkinson's Life magazine, get in touch through Facebook, Twitter, or by emailing editor@parkinsonslife.eu. Keep a lookout for our next episode, and until then, take care.